Five, are you ready, Steve?
Yeah, we're recording.
We're recording. Okay, here we go. On this beautiful Sunday morning, June 1st, right? Yeah, so Michael so wonderfully noticed as he walked in our house today. Okay, Ephesians chapter 5. This is where we began last week. Remember, we looked at what is love, and we learned a bunch of things. We learned that God loved us from when? Way back, yeah, because it says, first of all, that God never changes, right? He's always the same, has been, always is, and always will be, and it says that God is love. So, and it says he loves us. So he loved us from the very beginning. And so we start in chapter 5, and we'll just read the verses there quickly. It says, be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, meaning be imitators of God, right? Or apers of God. How about that? Apes imitate. So people that imitate can be called mimics. They can be called apers. You didn't know that, huh? Okay. Anyway, be imitators of God as dear children. And of course, children many times imitate when they, and that's how they learn, right? Okay, that's why girls always want to walk. Little girls walk in high heels and want lipstick on and all that stuff. And then it says, and is a
conjunction,
meaning it is connected to what has just been said. And walk in love as Christ also hath loved us and hath given himself for us an offering, a sacrifice to God for a sweet smelling savor. So we are to walk, we're to be imitators of God and walk in love as Christ also hath loved us. And certainly Christ was one of the great people to walk in love, wasn't he? So that brought two questions to bear, which we looked at last week. What is love? And we saw that it was a decision that we make, a commitment that we make, and that it's under our control. It's not emotion-based. There may be emotions that emanate from those decisions, those commitments, and that it's giving. And then we looked at what Jesus Christ said, and Jesus Christ said, you know, it's been said that you are to love your neighbors, and certainly it says we are to love the brethren, right? But it also, then Jesus Christ said, not only that, but you should love your enemies. You should bless them that curse you, do good unto them that hate you, and pray for those that persecute you, right? So bless, do good, pray for. So certainly if we're going to love, those are three things that are involved in loving. How about that? So we learned what love is, and we learned some of how we do love, how we walk love. We saw that love was commanded by God. You know, you don't really have a choice. It's commanded of God. We saw that it was manifested in giving, and that we were to love each other and we were to love our enemies. Now we're going to look at some examples of decisions and actions of people in God's word in light of love. So let's go to John, Gospel of John, chapter 11. And obviously the first example is going to be involved with Jesus Christ. And this is a pretty cool record. This is about Lazarus. But think of it in terms of love. So chapter 11 of John, verse 1. Now a certain man was sick, named Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. So we have this little family unit here. It's Lazarus, the brother, and Mary and Martha, the two sisters. And then there's a parenthesis in verse 2 because what it's going to tell us is something that happened in the future. But because John is a narrative looking back, it can tell us about something that happened in the future that's involved, even though this record is we're dealing with here. So it says, it was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sisters sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. And apparently Jesus Christ had a very warm and close relationship with Mary and Martha and their brother Lazarus. And so the women send a message to Jesus Christ and they say, "He whom thou lovest is sick." And it's not just he has a cold, is it? But he is seriously sick. And when Jesus heard that, he said, "This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So again, it tells us that he loved them. He had a pretty nice, wonderful, warm, close relationship with his family. It doesn't say that he had this kind of relationship with other people. But you know, we all are closer to some people than others, and just so happened that they really loved Jesus Christ and welcomed him into their home and blessed him, and they weren't concerned about criticism, and he really loved them and got along with them. Okay, verse 6, "And when he had heard, therefore, that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was." Now, if somebody you loved was seriously ill, what would maybe be the first thing you did?
Drop whatever you're doing.
Yeah, drop whatever you're doing and run to them. You know, book a flight, yeah, call a cab, fill the car up with gas, saddle the camel, you know, whatever. However, Jesus Christ did what? He stayed where he was. He abode still 2 days. And he must have been a ways away, because we'll see in a few minutes. "Then after that, saith he to his disciples, let us go into Judea again. Then his disciples say unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and goest thou thither again?" So the last time that Jesus Christ was in Judea, which is where Bethany was, the Judeans, the Jews, tried to kill him. And so his disciples say unto him, the guys that were close to him, they say, "You sure you want to go back there again? They tried to kill you." So there's a couple of interesting things here in light of the fact that Jesus Christ loved Lazarus and his sisters. He didn't just run there right away. He abode still. And then when he decides to go, when he's ready to go, or when God tells him to go, he is ready to go in spite of the fact that he may put his life in danger. How about that? Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. These things said he, and after that he saith unto them, Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep." So what he is saying here is Lazarus has died. God uses the word sleep. It's a figure of speech. And we know that figures of speech are used to emphasize the truth even more than if we told the literal truth. And the literal truth would be that he is dead. But the figure is a euphemism. It's using a soft term instead of a hard term. Death is a lot harder word than sleep, right? It has a much starker, more stern meaning than sleep, because the truth of the matter is it is a temporary thing for Lazarus. Okay? Here we go. "Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well." Okay, this is one of those things. Remember, you learn in the word. If the word is figurative and you take it literally, you're going to misunderstand. And if it's literal and you take it figurative, you're going to misunderstand, right? Here he is speaking figuratively and they take it literal, so they misunderstand. See, and the same thing is true when we read and study the word. If there's a figure of speech there and we take it literally, like,
heat
pots of fire or fire upon people's heads in Romans. Your enemies, you know, it says heap coals of fire. Well, that's a figure of speech or an idiom meaning warm them. Well, here he said, you know, his disciples say, "Well, Lord, if he's sleeping, he must be getting better." Then Jesus said to them plainly, Lazarus is dead. I bet that was a slap in the face. I bet those guys went, whoa. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there to the intent ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. At this point, the disciples must be shaking their heads and scratching and saying, what the heck? Listen to how brave they are, though. Then said Thomas, which is called Didymus, and you better be brave if you have a name like Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, let us also go that we may die with him. Well, you know, you laugh, but you know, that was pretty noble. They loved Jesus Christ. So again, they were willing to go and face death for his sake. Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. So it took him 2 days to get there, right? He waited 2 days and then he went and it took him 2 days to get there. So Lazarus was dead for 4 days. Verse 18, now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem about 15 furlongs off, and many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went to meet him, but Mary sat still in the house. And of course, this has to do with the Judean or Israelitish customs that when somebody died, they would bury him within 24 hours, and then they would sit in the house, and it was called sitting Shiva. And they would sit and mourn, and then friends and relatives and neighbors would come in and bring them food because they weren't allowed to cook or work. And people would sit and mourn with them. And actually, there in those days, they even had professional mourners that would come in and scream and holler and cry and all kinds of stuff just to make everybody feel better. It's true. That's what they did. Okay. So then said Martha unto Jesus, she ran to Jesus, and she said, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. Well, that must have made him feel good. But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask God, God will give it to thee. And Jesus saith unto her, thy brother shall rise again. Martha said unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Well, that was pretty smart, huh? She learned something from Jesus Christ. She learned about the resurrection, believed it, and she believed that her brother would rise the last day. She believed in a hope. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believeth thou this? She saith unto him, Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which is come into the world. She didn't say, he's God. Did she? She said, thou art the Christ, the Son of God. He did not correct her. How about that? And when she had so said, she went her way and called Mary, her sister, secretly saying, the Master is come and calleth for thee. As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. And Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. And the Jews then, which were with her in the house with Mary, and comforted her, when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, she goeth unto the grave to weep there. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was, and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hast been here, my brother had not died. Again, both sisters were of the same mind, weren't they? When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled, and said, where have ye laid him? And they said unto the Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. You know, when I read this, I've read this, I don't know, a zillion times. It's the shortest verse in the Bible. Of course, verses are not of any authority. They're man-made. But I thought, I wonder who he's weeping for. Is he weeping for Lazarus, or is he weeping for the people's misunderstanding and unbelief? Doesn't tell us, so I don't know. I just thought about that the other day, and I've read that for 30 years, never gave it a thought. I said, why is he weeping?
Well, he was weeping. That's for sure.
Situation is such that he is really challenged, isn't he? Then he goes, then said the Jews, behold how he loved him. They looked at his weeping and thought, wow, Jesus really loved him. He's weeping for him. You know, sometimes people weep, it's not because they love, it's just because they're emotional, huh? You ever see somebody weep at a movie? You know, they don't really love the movie, do they? They don't really love the person in the movie. They just, you know, emotion. It just grabs you to a certain place. You know, sometimes I watch a movie and it grabs my emotions and I get angry because they're manipulating you. But in this case, Jesus wept and the Jews said, behold, how he loved him. And some of them said, could not this man which opened the eyes of the blind have caused that even this man should have not died? So there's a real challenge, isn't it? They're kind of saying this to demean him. Jesus, therefore, again groaning in himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, take away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead for 4 days. Jesus saith unto her, said I not unto thee, if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee thou hast heard me, and I knew that thou hearest always, but because the people which stand by thee said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he thus had spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth bound hand and foot with the grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. And Jesus said unto them, loose him and let him go. Then many of the Jews which came to Mary and had seen the things which Jesus did believed on him. How about that? So there's a lot of interesting stuff here. They love Jesus Christ, Mary, Martha, and her brother. And he loved them. Yet he didn't just run when he heard about the sickness. He waited until God told him what to do. So, you know, one of the first things we see about love being manifest, and it says that we are to love as Jesus Christ loved, right? Is that he always put God first in the situation. You know, he put God first. He did what God wanted him to do in that situation. So if you're going to love, it may be that there are emotions involved. It may be that you want to do things or there may be feelings. But if you're really going to love with genuine love, you have to do what God would have you to do first. You have to have God first, or it's really fake. It's phony. It's baloney. You see? So the first thing we want to do when we are loving people is we want to love God. We want to put him first. Pretty great. What a great lesson that is. So if we want to live love like Jesus Christ, we have to obey God and do what he would have us to do. I'm sure that Jesus Christ wanted to go to see Lazarus immediately. I'm sure it tore at his heart and he anguished over it. But God said, wait. And then when he decided to go, the disciple said, don't go, you may die. And again, he did what? Listen to God. He listened to God. Okay, let's go to 2 Kings. This is a pretty cool one. So we saw an example of Jesus Christ. We're going to see a different example here. Chapter 5 of 2 Kings. And this is another great record. And verse 1. It says, now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable because by the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. By him, the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. And he was also a mighty man in valor. But he was what?
A leper.
A leper. He was just falling apart. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid. And she waited on Naaman's wife, and she said unto her mistress, Would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. So Syria had gone out and made war against the chosen ones of God, Israel, because Israel was not doing exactly what they were supposed to. So this man Naaman, who was a great general of the army of Syria, went and warred. And one of the things they did is they brought back this little girl, a maid from Israel, and she waited on. She was a servant to Naaman's wife. And she said, you know, if he would go and visit the man of God, the prophet, which is in Samaria, he'll recover him of his leprosy. He will get healed. Wow. Verse 4. And one went in and told his lord, saying, Thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel. And the king of Syria said, Go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel. And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. The king of Syria really wanted to get him healed, and he was not going to spare any expense. Because a talent of silver, I don't know how much it is really. I have a note in my Bible that says it's something like 410 pounds. Now, a pound is about $2. And here it says that he's sending how many talents? 10 talents. So 10, that would be $8,000?
No, a lot more.
A lot more. And then 6,000 pieces of gold. And gold today is about $1,000 an ounce. So if each piece is an ounce. So he's sending a lot. Plus 10 changes of raiment. Do you think he was sending rags? Probably some pretty fancy duds. Okay, and he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, Now when this letter has come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman, my servant, to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy. Did the little girl say to send him to the king of Israel?
No.
No, said send him to the man of God. But the king of Syria doesn't understand, so he sends a letter to the king of Israel. Okay, because Samaria is in Israel, and the king is in charge. And it came to pass when the king of Israel had read the letter that he rent his clothes and said, Am I God to kill and to make alive that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh the quarrel again. He thought that the king of Syria was looking for an excuse to invade. So he could, you know, come in and wipe out the king and take all the riches of Israel. So verse 8. And so it was when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. And to rent his clothes means he tore his mantle, and that was a sign of great despair. Right? God bless you. So, Elisha, the prophet, the man of God, sends a note to the king and says, What's your problem? I'm here. Verse 9, so Naaman came with his horses and his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. Do you think he just came by himself?
Nope. No.
I think he came with a great entourage. Probably hundreds of men, maybe thousands, with horses and chariots and soldiers, foot soldiers and all kinds of stuff, as well as the animals to carry all the gold and silver. Well, so Naaman came with his horses and his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha ran out to meet him and bowed down. No, he didn't, did he? And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times. He didn't even come out and talk to him. It's pretty amazing. But you know what? In the East, they understood that. And they understood that a man of God was, as far as respect was concerned, was at the pinnacle. He was at the top. And he got more respect even than kings. And so he was not insulted by the fact that Elisha did not come out and meet him. But he was insulted about something else. Because Elisha sent a messenger to him and said, Go wash in the Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. It's a pretty simple directive. Now let me ask you a question. Elisha is the prophet in Israel. Naaman is the great general of Syria who is the enemy of Israel. Do you think Elisha loved Israel and his own people?
Yeah.
Do you think this thrilled him that he was going to do this? Probably wasn't real happy about it. You know, if you go and read about Jonah, that's exactly why Jonah did what he did. God told him to go to Nineveh, that the people would repent. And Jonah hopped the boat to go in the opposite direction because he loved Israel. And said, I don't want to go there. And God had to make other arrangements, other travel arrangements. So, anyway. Verse 11, but Naaman was wroth. That means he was upset, PO'd, angry. And went away and said, behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call in the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. You know, I just thought this was going to be so Hollywood. And then, you know, the prophet was going to come out and he'd have a long beard and a white robe. And he would raise his hand and the lightning would flash and the angels would sing in heaven. And the trump of the Lord would sound and I would be recovered. That's what he thought. You know, lots of times that's what we think, don't we? Lots of times that's what we're looking for. Okay. Then he says, are not Abana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spake unto him, and I'm sure they weren't really bold in this, and said, my father, if the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, if he told you to go and wrestle an alligator or a crocodile or kill a lion with a spear by yourself, some great deed, wouldest thou not have done it? How much rather than when he saith to thee, wash and be clean? How simple is it? You know, why not just go wash, do what he says and be clean? Then he went down and dipped himself seven times in the Jordan according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And of course, a little child has milk pure skin, don't they? It's just clean and pure and all that stuff. And he returned home, and he returned to the man of God, he and all his company. He came and stood before him, and he said, behold, now I know there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. So this guy believes in the true God. Isn't that something? He was the great general of the unbelieving king of Syria, and he comes back and he believes God. And he offers to give everything he has that he's brought with him as a gift to Elisha. Verse 16, but he said, as the Lord liveth before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Elisha said, no, I can't take it. And why do you think that? That's right. God told him not to take it. And Naaman said, shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant 2 mules burden of earth? For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. In this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing. He said, you know, there's one problem. I'm going to go back to the king of Syria, and he requires of me that I go into the temple of Rimmon, a false idol, a god that's not true, and he holds my hand, and I have to bow down with him before this false god. He said, my heart is with the true God that healed me of my leprosy. Can God forgive me or pardon me when I have to do this? And he, Elijah, said unto him, go in peace. Which means, it's cool. Your heart is pure before God. God won't hold this against you. What a loving God, huh? What a great God. So he departed from him a little way. But Gehazi, the servant Elijah, the man of God, said, behold, my master has spared Naaman the Syrian in not receiving at his hands that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. Gehazi sees a little opportunity here to make a little cash. So Gehazi followed after Naaman. When Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from his chariot to meet him and said, "Is all well?" And he said, "All is well. My master has sent me, saying, 'Behold, even now there become to me from Mount Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophets. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two changes of garment.'" He lied, didn't he? He said, "You know, there's some guests coming," and so Elisha has changed his mind. So he says, "Could I get a little?" He doesn't take it all. He's not greedy. He figures, you know, if I take a little bit, I can hide it and it won't be a big deal. And Naaman said, "Be content, take two talents." And he urged him and bound two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of garments and laid them upon two of his servants, and they bare them before him. And when he came to the tower, he took them from their hand and bestowed them in the house and let the men go, and they departed. And he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said unto him, "Whence comest thou, Gehazi?" And he said, "Thy servant went nowhither." Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think Elisha loved Gehazi?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It was his servant. He took him everywhere with him. He was his right-hand man. It was his servant, you know, and he loved Gehazi. Listen. And he said unto him, "Went not mine heart with thee?" When he saw, when God showed him what Gehazi was doing, he said, "My heart went out." When the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee, "Is it a time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants? The leprosy thereof of Naaman shall cleave unto thee and unto thy seed forever." Do you think that Elisha wanted to do this? I don't think so. He loved Gehazi. This must have just tore him up. But who did he love first?
God.
That's right. He loved God first. He did what he didn't want to do. And he didn't do what he wanted to do. And he went out from his presence a leper as white as snow. And I bet you Gehazi loved Elisha too. He served him faithfully. But he got tricked. And he did what he thought would be pleasurable. Didn't think it would hurt anybody. And he didn't listen to the man of God, which means he didn't listen to God. How about that? Okay, one more. Luke chapter 22. So there again, the lesson is, if you're going to love, you have to put God first. And certainly Elisha loved Gehazi, but he loved God more. And he did what was right. It's an interesting insight into love. Chapter 22 of Luke, verse 39. You're all familiar with this, but let's look at it anyway. Because again, Jesus Christ is the great example of loving. The greatest example of loving. And it says in verse 39, "He came out and went as he was wont to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples also followed him." Oh my goodness. This is right after the Last Supper. "And when he was at the place, he said unto them, 'Pray that ye enter not into temptation.' And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's cast, and kneeled down and prayed, saying, 'Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done.'" Did Jesus Christ want to get crucified? No. He loved life, I'm sure. Just like all of us. And I'm sure he didn't love pain. "And there appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him." So God loved Jesus Christ. What did he do? Do you think God really was happy about sending Jesus Christ to endure all that pain? Probably not. But he loved Jesus, and he loved Jesus Christ, didn't he? And yet, this was God's plan of redemption. This is the only way it could be done, apparently. Because Jesus Christ prayed and said, if there's a different way we can do this, you know, if there's a different way of achieving what you want to achieve, can we pull out plan B? You know, is there any good surprises there for us to do it a different way? And instead, God sent an angel to strengthen him. "And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground. And when he rose up from prayer, and he was come to his disciples, he found them sleeping for sorrow. And he said unto them, why sleep ye? Rise up and pray, lest ye enter into temptation.
And then, of course, he is betrayed. But Jesus Christ loved. And he loved, but he was willing to do God's will. You see? And that truly was the loving thing, isn't it? Because, you know, number one, it says in John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. And it says that Jesus Christ loved us and was willing to give his life for us. That was his love to us. So again, it was giving. It was giving and it was doing the will of God. It was doing what God would have them to do. So let's go back to Ephesians chapter 2. And we will close here. Chapter 2, verse 4. It says, but God, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherewith he loved us. God's mercy is rich in mercy for his great love wherewith he loved us. You know, if we're to be imitators of God, then we have to be rich in mercy. What is mercy? It's not giving what is deserved, which, you know. So if somebody does you wrong, what they deserve is maybe a punch in the nose, and or they deserve what they did to you, and you don't do it. You turn the other cheek. You walk away. You pray for them. You bless them. You do good unto them. Isn't that what Jesus Christ said? There you go. But God, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherewith he loved us, even when we were dead in sins, hath quickened us together with Christ. By grace ye are saved. So it says, even when we were not so good, God was gracious towards us. So when we walk in love, we're gracious. And we put God first. We do God's will, not our will. You can't be loving if you're not putting God first. It just doesn't work. It may look good to people at times. It may seem good. It may be what you want to do. But if it's not what God wants you to do, it's not loving. So God, we thank you for this day. We thank you for loving us and taking care of us. And we thank you for all you do for us continually, for that great love wherewith you loved us, even when we were stinky. And we just thank you that we can walk in that love and be great imitators of you like dear children. And we thank you for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.